thanks, Dave, for that update. It was a great weekend last weekend, and it feels like I haven't seen you for like 3 weeks, because I haven't. But the weekend before, I had the privilege of going and spending the weekend with the young adults at their retreat, and that was a wonderful time as well. But it was a good time with the elders last week, just to get to know them better and to spend that time together. And it's funny, Dave, as you were praying about tax collectors, I had this thing I hadn't thought of all week in studying this passage. My sister was a tax collector all her life, all of her career. She worked for the Ministry of Finance, as you said that. It's like, oh, she was a tax collector. She's nothing like the biblical tax collector. She's really nice, but just that connection. I think I'll call her Zacchaeus from now on. Her son's name is Zach. Sorry, I'm just having these insights as we're standing here. Let me get on to this actual passage. So here we are, we're still in our series, our winter series we've called Choosing Jesus, as we're walking through the book of Luke and following Jesus on his journey from his birth until his death and resurrection, which we'll get to celebrate in 2 weeks. I'm looking forward to that for sure. But we've seen that as Jesus has been going through the Gospel of Luke, we've been watching how Jesus has had these encounters with people. And how he's coming and he's presenting this idea of the kingdom. And that he's telling people that choosing to follow me comes at a cost. Remember a couple weeks ago, Pastor Paul preached on that there's a cost to discipleship. It's not an easy ride. It's not a spectator sport. Right? The call that Jesus gives is take up your cross and follow me. Like, and not just once, but every single day, take up your cross and follow me. And then last week, we saw another encounter. Pastor Marcio was teaching us about the rich young ruler. Remember that? That encounter. And the thing that impacts me about that encounter is that encounter with Jesus left that young, wealthy man sad. I'm pretty sure it's probably one of the only times we see an encounter with Jesus that goes bad for the person. Or at least they walk away sad. See, he couldn't see beyond the piles and piles of money that he had in order to choose Jesus. And today we're going to look at another encounter with a rich man, right? Zacchaeus. But this encounter goes entirely different. They had things in common, this rich young ruler and Zacchaeus, right? They were both sons of Abraham. They were Jewish by birth. They likely grew up going to synagogue, going to the temple, learning. Part of the chosen people. And yet one walked away sad and one rejoiced. If you have your Bible, I want you to open up to Luke chapter 19. Luke 19, as we're going to look at an actual encounter that Jesus had, an event with Zacchaeus. But also we'll take a quick look at what happens after as Jesus teaches a parable resulting from that encounter. And what I want you to watch out for as we go through this passage this morning is this, that when you choose Jesus, you will see a heart change within yourself. When you take his call seriously, your heart will change. So here we have Luke 19. I'll read you verses 1 to 10. He entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was. But on account of the crowd, he could not because he was small in stature. Or the kids' version is he was a wee little man. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all grumbled. That's the crowd. He has gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, since he is also a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. It's a little bit of an aside, but I was having some trouble this week as I'm studying this very well-known passage. And it was like Wednesday afternoon, and I still didn't really know where I was going with this. And so I left a little bit early, I'm sorry. But I went out for a walk. It was a beautiful day Wednesday. I went for a walk on the trail. And as I was walking and praying, the Lord sort of said to me, Dave, You're trying to force this story in a certain direction. See, I was trying to make this story about finances. And finances play a part in this, and sure, it's part of what happens in the story, but I was trying to jam this story into a financial theme. And the Lord made it very clear to me on that walk that verse 10 is the key verse of this passage. And I think one of the key verses when we want to understand what Jesus' mission was when he came to this earth. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. To seek and to save the lost. And so I had to have my own heart changed this week as I was trying to go a certain path with this message. And the Lord made it very clear that I was missing it myself this week. So what I want to do is I want to walk through the story a little bit. There's nine scenes in this story that I want us to look at. Verse 1 as it begins, right, says, he entered Jericho, was passing through. This is Jesus, of course, and his disciples and his followers. Just before this event occurs, he's just healed a blind man by the side of the road. He's coming to Jerusalem. So coming through Jericho. And it says he was passing through. Almost we get the sense that Jesus and his disciples had no intent of stopping in Jericho this day. Because if you look, remember back when Derek preached a number of weeks ago in Luke chapter 9, there's a phrase there that I think is very important for us to remember at this point in Jesus' ministry. He set his face toward Jerusalem. Jesus came and he gathered his disciples, gathered some followers and did some teaching. But in Luke 9, he set his face to Jerusalem because he knew that he needed to go and do what he came to do, to go and be our salvation. So here he comes into Jericho. Jericho, this city of historical significance for Israel, right? This is the first battle that the Israelites won as they came into the promised land, right? They marched around the walls of Jericho once a day for six days. And the seventh day, they walked around seven times. And when Joshua said, shout, they shouted and the walls tumbled down. And Israel took that city that day. The city has historic significance for these people. And at the time that Jesus is here coming in, Jericho was kind of one of these chief oases in the middle of a barren terrain. It's actually kind of like cottage country. There's King Herod himself had a summer palace in Jericho, and a number of the aristocracy from Jerusalem had residences in Jericho. So kind of like they went off to their cottage country retreat. So you kind of get the idea that this is a beautiful area, lush. And the other benefit or the thing about Jericho we need to know is that it's for people traveling between Galilee and Jerusalem. It's a major trade route. And this major trade route passes by, so all the different businesses and sellers are able to make money from travelers. And then there's just all the wealth from these, they say they have famous balsam groves, balsam like trees. And here's Jesus with his disciples coming into Jericho with his face set to Jerusalem on the way through, but something happens. We meet someone else in this story in verse 2. Behold, there's a man named Zacchaeus, right? He was a chief tax collector and he was rich. A son of Abraham, Jesus calls him later on in this passage. Now, interesting, Zacchaeus, his name means pure and righteous. Pure and righteous, which kind of doesn't go with his career of being a tax collector. Like tax collectors of the day were despised. They were hated. And the reason why they were hated was they were Jews who were working for Rome collecting taxes from fellow Jews. So how it worked was these tax collectors were told from Rome, we want this much money from this area, and so you go and get that from the people, and then whatever else you can get above that, you can keep. This is how he became rich. So Zacchaeus is a tax collector. But notice, he's not just a tax collector. He's actually a chief tax collector as well. I mean, he's got minions working for him. He's skimming off the top of them as well. And you think our taxes are bad. There's the Jewish triple tax, okay? So 10% goes to the priests and the Levites. 10% goes to the temple festivities. 3 1/3% go to the poor, plus add on another temple tax. But then add on the Roman tax. And that Roman tax ranged from 3 weeks' earnings, which is really only a measly 6%, up to 30% of all of one's income, right? Sales tax, customs, annual tribute, all those different things Rome wanted to collect money for. So you add those two sets of taxes together, and you can see that many Jews are paying over half of their income in tax. Can you begin to see why these tax collectors were not exactly liked? Why they were despised and hated? We see an example of how this happens as we go on in verse 3-4. He was seeking, Zacchaeus was seeking who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. Zacchaeus was asking, who is Jesus? He'd heard the stories about what's been going on in the ministry he's been doing, but Zacchaeus wanted to know who he was. He was curious. And one, I've been given some instruction as I have been mentored along the years, and one piece of instruction that I was given in pastoring is recognizing people and what they're coming to me for. I was told there's two categories of people, those who care and those who are curious, right? Those who care really want to know what's going on. They want to understand so they can be a support, a help. They want to come alongside. And then there's those who are curious. They just want to know. They want to be in the know. And I think we all know people like that who just seem to know everything that's going on in a town or in a church or in a workplace. They have all the gossip of what's going on and they can share that with you. At this point in our story, I don't know if Zacchaeus cares or if he's curious. We will find out, though. But here he is. He wants to seek Jesus. He wants to find Jesus. And Jesus is coming, and he goes out to find him, and the crowds are gathering for Jesus as he walks by. Like, almost picture a parade. And I have this vision of Santa Day in Fenland Falls. Santa Day is a day in the end of November when the whole day on Saturday is like sales and fun things for families downtown Fenland. And in this little town of 2,500 people, you know, balloons into 10,000. But the cap off of the day is the Santa Claus parade. And if you want to get a good spot, you've got to get there early. Otherwise, you're stuck behind people. This is what Zacchaeus is finding. He's stuck behind people. He can't see because he's a wee little man. And because he's a tax collector, people don't want to let him in. They don't want to say, hey, why don't you come up in front so you can see? So not letting him in. But Zacchaeus, being a resourceful fellow, he thinks, I got an idea. I'm going to go climb a tree. So he goes and runs down the road, and he finds this sycamore tree. Like sycamores, they were planted along the road and they were like low, but they had really wide limbs. So don't picture Zacchaeus up like 20 feet. He's not up that high. It's not that hard of a climb. So he's not, you know, shouldn't be praised for that. But he climbs up into this tree. Zacchaeus wants to see Jesus. But something happens in verse 5. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus. Turns out Jesus already wanted to see Zacchaeus. Jesus was seeking Zacchaeus, and he comes along, and there he is.
Sorry. I wonder if this is something wrong with this unit that happened 2 weeks ago. Sorry. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties and all that. Where was I? So Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus, but it turns out Jesus wanted to see Zacchaeus. Jesus was already seeking out Zacchaeus before Zac even got there. And he calls him by his name, right? That's that sweet thing we all love to hear someone call us by our own name. But Jesus gives him a call to action. He says, I want you to come down because I'm coming to your place. Jesus invites himself over to Zacchaeus' house, presumably for a meal. And so Zacchaeus quickly complies. It says he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. Zacchaeus obeyed the call of Jesus immediately. I know when we were raising our kids, when they were littler, we often say this to them, delayed obedience is disobedience, right? Delayed obedience is disobedience. And there's an element of where if you don't answer the call immediately, are you actually obeying if you do it later? Well, in one sense, you are. But there's an element where delayed obedience is disobedience. But Zacchaeus receives him joyfully. He comes down out of that tree. He's not doing this out of compulsion. He's not doing this as a chore or out of Jesus' expectation. He comes down quickly and receives him joyfully. And so off they go to Zacchaeus' place. Meanwhile, back at the parade route, murmuring is starting to happen. It says, when they saw it, meaning the crowd, when they saw it, they all grumbled. He's gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. It seems to be a common complaint about Jesus in our New Testament. He's hanging out with sinners. Do you remember the key verse we read? That's why Jesus came. Jesus came to seek and to save those who are lost. Jesus came to seek and to save the sinners. But they're grumbling about this. I mean, they grumbled about John the Baptist for not eating and drinking. You remember this? John the Baptist was out in the wilderness, like eating locusts and honey and not doing what was expected of him. And then Jesus, they're complaining that he is eating and drinking, right? You can't win in those situations. Sometimes you're in those kind of situations where you have to just to choose to do what is right and forget about the detractors. But they say he's gone in to spend time with a sinner. And if you look through the New Testament, 8 or 9 times in the Gospels, it's one category, tax collectors and sinners. Like, it's one thing. They were looked at as, if you're a tax collector, you are a sinner. There's no hope for them. So I want to know, is the crowd righteous? Or like, are they actually in a position where they can make this judgment? Like, are they acting with sober judgment? Or are they just jealous that Jesus isn't spending time with them? I mean, reality is they're self-righteous, right? Someone who's not like me is obviously wrong. Have you ever experienced that? When you're driving on the highway, whatever speed you're driving, I won't call you out, whatever speed you're driving and you come up behind someone who's going like 10 kilometers slower than you, what's your first thought? Oh, man, that's dangerous. They're going to cause an accident. They're going way too slow, right? Because they're going to cause someone to run behind them. But what happens when someone drives and passes you going 10 kilometers over? Oh, man, that's dangerous. They're going to cause an accident for going too fast. Because obviously you're going the right speed, whatever speed that is. But here's this crowd is grumbling because Jesus is going to spend time with this sinner, this tax collector. So this dinner happens, and we find that Zacchaeus repents. Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." We don't know what happened at that dinner. We don't know what Jesus said. We don't even know who all was there, but we do know what the outcome was. Whatever happened, whatever they ate, whatever was said, Zacchaeus stands up and gets everyone's attention. Maybe he stood on a chair, I don't know. But what he does is, first thing he does is he confesses his sin. Like he says, I've extorted, I've committed usury, I've overcharged the people. He confesses his sin and then he commits to rectify the situation. And he does it publicly. this sentence or this phrase came to me this week as I was looking at this part. It says this: private confession will keep the sin private. Public confession brings freedom. There's something about that. Yeah, we need to confess our sin to God, absolutely. But sometimes you need a public confession. And I don't mean come up here and share your dirty laundry with all of us. Know your audience. But maybe there's one person you know well enough that you can share what you're struggling with them. Private sin remains private. Sorry, private confession will keep the sin private. But Zacchaeus commits to rectify the situation publicly. He says, half of my stuff I'm going to give to the poor. This is stuff he's bought with ill-gotten gain. This is stuff he's bought with stolen money. I'm going to give half of it to the poor. And then he says, interestingly, if I've defrauded anyone. That if stood out to me this week. Now, he's a tax collector, so he's definitely raking in more than he should have. He's rich, after all. But when he says if, is it possible to give the guy a bit of a break? That he didn't defraud everyone. I think it's fair to say that that's possible. I mean, there were still legally owed taxes, but he recognizes that I've done a lot of bad. I've done a lot of extortion, a lot of taking, a lot of stealing. And therefore, I'm going to restore it fourfold, four times the defrauded amount. And notice that the restore is in the present tense. It's not like I will. He's like, I'm already in the process of doing this. Like, it's in my mind. I know what I'm going to do. And interesting enough, Zacchaeus goes over and above what the law commands. In Leviticus 6, the Lord's speaking to Moses and gives him this instruction. If anyone sins and commits a breach of faith against the Lord by deceiving his neighbor in a matter of deposit or security, or through robbery, or if he's oppressed his neighbor or found something lost and lied about it, all the things can describe Zacchaeus. If he has sinned and has realized his guilt and will restore what he took by robbery, so give back the defrauded portion. That's part of the law. Give that part back. He shall restore it in full and shall add a fifth to it, one fifth. Same thing in Numbers chapter 5. He shall confess his sin that he's committed. He shall make full restitution for his wrong, adding a fifth to it, giving it to him whom he did the wrong. The law called for him to return the defrauded amount and one-fifth, 20%. Zacchaeus is giving back four times the defrauded amount. He's going over and above. He's going from greed, which is now turned to generosity. Jesus says something to him at this moment. Today, salvation has come to this house, since he is also a son of Abraham. Today, at this moment, right now, salvation has come. Now recognize, it's not because of the money, how he's giving the money back. That's not where his salvation comes from. Zacchaeus, Jesus declares salvation in that house because of the change of heart that Zacchaeus has had. Choosing Jesus will signal a change of heart, a change of attitude. It says salvation has come. And I think there's two ways to look at this. Of course, there's the whole idea that Zacchaeus is being granted salvation by Jesus. The second thing is this, and I think it's interesting. Who is Jesus? Jesus is salvation. Today, salvation has come to your house. He's standing in front of you. He's eating at your table with you. Jesus, we know, is the way, the truth, and the life. And we know that with his face set towards Jerusalem, in 2 weeks, we are going to celebrate that salvation has come to this place, to our hearts. And that's the whole point. Jesus came to seek and to save those who were lost. That's why Jesus came to Zacchaeus' house. It's why he came to Jericho that day at all. It's why he came at all to be on this earth, to seek and to save the lost. And often it's those who are far away from Christ who are quicker to see the sin in their lives when it's brought to them than those who have been close to Christ for a long time. for those of us who grew up in the church, this church or another church, we've heard the stories over and over again. And I don't know about you, but I found that I got to a point where those stories go in one ear and out the other because, yeah, I already know it. I know that story. I know how it ends. What happens is we think we're choosing Jesus, but really what we're doing is we're choosing church. We like coming to the church. We like being with our friends. We like singing together. We like even like serving together. That was me in high school. I grew up in the church, and I'd heard all the stories, and I had good friends. So why did I go to Sunday evening service? Because my friends were there. I loved going to our youth group. I loved playing with the worship team. I loved being involved and busy. But I was choosing church, hoping to get Jesus thrown in. The rich young ruler, Zacchaeus, these sons of Abraham, cultural and religious Jews, they were far from Jesus. Well, Zacchaeus was. The rich young ruler thought he was close. I keep all the commands. I do all the things. But he went away sad, for he was rich. Zacchaeus recognized his sin, and he chose Jesus that day. And as Jesus leaves Zacchaeus' house, he tells them a parable. Mostly because the people who are around him thought, when he's going to Jerusalem, they thought he was going to set up his kingdom. That, you know, we're going to be released and freed from our oppression shortly. But I think this is a warning to those people. And maybe it's a warning to those of us who've grown up in the church. The story he tells is about a nobleman who's going away to receive a kingdom. He's going to go and be made king over an area. Before he goes, he calls 10 servants to him and gives each one mina, which, depending on who you read, it's either 3 days' wages or 3 months' wages. But he says to them, take this one mina, and I want you to go, and I want you to engage in business until I come. He gives them all to the servants. They don't belong to the servants. They need to go and use it. He's going to have them give account when he returns. He goes away. He receives his kingdom. He comes back and he calls the servants to him and says, okay, report back. What did you do with what I gave you? The first one comes forward. He had been given one mina and he says, I've gained 10 more minas. And the master says, well done, good servant. Faithful in little, I'm going to give you authority over 10 cities. Another one comes forward and says, I took your one mina, I gained 5 more. He says, well done, I'm going to give you authority over 5 cities. And there's the one that comes, fumbling for his one mina out of the handkerchief in his toga pocket. He says, I was afraid of you because you are a severe man. You take what you did not deposit and reap what you did not sow. He was afraid, so he protected what he was given. He thinks he knows his master. You're a severe man. It's not what the master had wanted. It's not what the master had instructed. Luke 19:22, the master had that one mina taken and given to the one with 10. I see my teenage self in that last servant, working hard to appear like I have chosen Jesus. But in reality, I was choosing church. Now, I want you to hear this. Like, when I say choosing church isn't a good thing, I don't mean it's not a good thing. But you can't choose church and hope to get Jesus. But when you choose Jesus, you get the church. It's important to be a part of a local body. It's important to be with brothers and sisters who have the same faith as you. But like when you're trying to figure out the math equation to get your roll up the rim prizes, order of operations matters. You choose Jesus first, and you get the church thrown in. And I say this because choosing church has no lasting value without Jesus. beyond your physical life. Only with Jesus does it matter. And I say that because I want you to turn back to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7 has three verses that should terrify a nominal Christian. If you are choosing church and not choosing Jesus, these verses should cause a shiver down your spine. Jesus says, "Not everyone who calls me Lord is going to enter the kingdom of heaven. On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name?'" They were serving the church. They were doing the work that looks like they've chosen Jesus. But what's he say? "I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness." Sends a shiver down my spine. I was serving, I was attending, I was participating, but I was choosing church. "I never knew you." Those are words I hope you never hear from Jesus. I hope that you hear, "Good, well done, good and faithful servant." Being part of the church should feel good. I mean, this should be a safe place for us to come together, to share our concerns, to be built up. Just imagine how much greater it is when you choose Jesus. And you take him at his word, like Zacchaeus. You'll begin to see a change in your heart. Maybe not as abruptly as Zacchaeus, but when you realize what you have been forgiven from and what you have been forgiven to, oh man, serving and following Jesus becomes natural. Now, will it be easy? No, the Christian life isn't easy. We learned about that a couple weeks ago. Will all your problems and troubles go away? Nope, you'll still have them. But it won't matter when Jesus can say to you, "Today, salvation has come to your house." Let's pray. Our God and our Father, it's with humble and contrite hearts that we approach your throne, recognizing how easy it is for us to get caught up in the doings of being a follower, the doings of choosing church. God, I would pray that for each one of us this morning, that you would touch our heart in a way, touch our mind in a way that we understand if we are truly choosing Jesus or merely choosing the church. Would you give us a passion to follow him with all of our life, all of who we are? That one day we would come home and you would look at us and say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." We thank you for Jesus. We thank you for what we get to celebrate in a couple of weeks, that he came to this earth, that he came and he died to be the payment of our sin. And that glorious day that followed that, when he was risen again, the stamp that gives us our hope in our salvation, in his resurrection. We thank you and praise you for him in Jesus' name. Amen.